actually, if it encompasses the good and the bad and the ugly.
Well, I think a good working definition of anger is that it's an emotional state that varies in intensity from mild irritation to intense fury and rage. And as you were saying earlier, you know, the ideas and messages that we hear about anger can be very contradictory. Anger has been a focus of comment for hundreds of years and by philosophers, and most recently by psychologists and social scientists. And you have, for example, in the first century BC, Horace, the Roman philosopher, wrote, "Anger is a momentary madness. So control your passion, or it will control you." And there's an old proverb from India that goes, "Anger is as a stone cast into a wasp's nest." But then again, in the 20th century, we have Malcolm X commenting, "Usually," he said, "when people are sad, they don't do anything. They just cry over their condition. But when they get angry, they bring about a change." So, you know, while there are many examples of how anger can motivate people towards constructive action, we probably have more examples of how anger is harmful. It's been identified that consistent, prolonged levels of anger gives one a 5 times greater chance of dying before 50. Anger elevates blood pressure, increases threat of stroke, heart disease, depressions, anxiety, and is known to depress our immune system.
Now, this is for the person who is angry a lot of the time.
That's right.
About a lot of things.
Yes. Yeah, so that state of arousal is maintained. It doesn't just sort of flare up, get some, and then the individual get some resolution of some sort, and then it subsides. It gets up there, and it stays up there. And chronically angry people also have higher rates of car accidents and assault, and often tend to seek relief for their emotional distress through smoking, drinking, and other compulsive behaviors.
What about the triggers for anger?
Well, anger can be activated, triggered, as you say, by both what we call external and internal factors. An external factor is something like an annoying person, someone who's harassing you, perhaps, or an event like a canceled concert or bad weather.
Not in Canada, not in the winter.
Not in the Maritimes.
No.
But anger can also be caused by what we call internal factors, such as worrying, brooding, ruminating about personal problems or traumatic or disappointing memories. So we can activate ourselves without any external things happening just by what we focus on in our thinking. And, you know, the instinctive automatic way to express anger is to respond aggressively, which would be in word or deed. Now, on one hand, a certain amount of anger inspires us to defend ourselves in the face of a real threat. I mean, it's adaptive. But on the other hand, if we are physically lashing out or verbally at every person or object that irritates or annoys us, it creates an environment of social disruption and chaos. So, you know, you have to look at, is the anger appropriate to the context? I mean, I think that's a really important question to address when we're trying to ascertain, is this anger justified, possibly useful and healthy?
Okay, what about harnessing it in that case when it is a justifiable response to some event?
Oh, when it's justifiable. Well, when it's justifiable, it may still be out of the expression of the anger may still be in an awkward and alienating way that doesn't bring about any constructive change. When it's justified, generally we'll say treatment, if a person is coming to see me and they say, you know, this is going on in my life and I just feel so angry, and I go to, let's say, school meetings and the school is just continuously disappointing me in terms of following through on what we had agreed upon, and I walk into that meeting and I start screaming at them and they just all kind of seize up and then nothing happens. So I think I need some help with my anger. Okay, there's an example of a situation where I would say, very possibly, in this case it sounds like it would be a parent is speaking to me and they have reason to be frustrated. So what I would do is sit down with them and look at some it sounds like they're going into the meeting with a very aggressive stance, a very aggressive approach. And I would work on teaching the client how to be more assertive rather than aggressive. Learning assertiveness is known to be one of the most effective ways of harnessing anger and directing it in a way that's more socially constructive, that creates more problem solving, and in fact may even improve relationships as opposed to alienate people. You know, how to make friends, more friends and lose enemies, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, assertiveness training is a key part of harnessing justifiable anger. When I say anger, that seems to have real understandable triggers.
Okay, and by the way, Nina is here to answer any questions you have about a difficult personal relationship in your life. If you're stymied as to how to improve things, how to get past an impasse, give a call now, and Nina would be very happy to provide some advice, some things to try you haven't tried before, perhaps. 1-800-565-1940. That's 1-800-565-1940. Toll-free anywhere in the Maritimes in the Halifax area, 420-9336. Now, what about, you know, when anger really crosses the line, when people are even physically abusive to, mm-hmm. to someone else, they really just lose control completely, then we have, I guess, real anger management problems.
Well, we also have legal problems.
Yep, that too. Assault.
Yeah, well, you have charges of assault, mm-hmm. and that form of expression of anger in our society is not considered acceptable.
But some people, mm-hmm. again, you know, will have repeated charges for assault because they
yes.
have serious problems dealing with this eruption of anger.
Well, and I think you're getting into the area of what's called anger management. One of the fun, anger, people can be taught to manage this wild horse emotion, I called it. I mean, you can harness it. However, the will has to be there. And there are people who are ordered to have anger management, or they're sentenced, or they're recommended, or they're sent because of a spouse who says, you have to get anger management. If the individual themselves does not acknowledge that their anger is, as you say, out of control, over the line, if they think their behavior is entirely and completely justified, it's very difficult to do anything. A person has to be clearly motivated. And the first step to being motivated to change is to say, I do indeed have a problem. The problem with some people who are expressing their anger in very aggressive ways is that they will tend to maintain that the real problem is not themselves, is the people who annoy and activate them and provoke them to what they believe is a justifiable response. If you're dealing with someone like that, I mean, I'm saying as a psychologist, I don't get very far.
Okay, well, let's go to the phone lines. Our first caller is Kellyanne in...
A lot about people who explode, and I was explaining to the host that I grew up in a house where I had a father who was very unpredictable and very explosive and did exactly everything that you said about blaming, putting the blame on other people for how his mood was. And I think as a result of that, what I did was I took it and I internalized it.
Hmm.
And I find that I'm still really angry and very, it hurt the relationship that I had with both of my parents growing up, and I find I'm still angry, but I would never explode at my children or that kind of thing, but I internalize a lot of things, and I tend to not want to be confrontational with anybody or about how I feel.
That's very interesting. When I work with people, when I see people who come from families, from first families, where they were exposed to aggressive behavior in their parents, a lot of the people that I see grow up almost with an internal vow that they've made to themselves, that they will never be like they will never behave like that parent. Mm-hmm. In fact, they often strive to be just the opposite.
Right.
And so what I've often seen is people become very, very unassertive. And just what you're saying, that there's an abhorrence about the very idea of doing anything that even vaguely resembles being angry. Mm-hmm. The problem with that, once you, you know, grow up and leave home and start your own family, which means living with other people, the problem with taking that position is, as I guess you have experienced, is that by virtue of living with other people, unless we manage to marry someone and have children that are, I guess, are identical, perfect twins in all way, mm-hmm. we come into differences, and the people we live with frustrate us.
Yep.
And if we don't have a means by which to express, again, that justifiable frustration, it can leave you feeling sort of chronically tense and unhappy with no way to resolve it.
And also very offensive. I tend to, you know, when somebody criticizes me, I take it to the very heart of who I am. It's almost like it's crushing to me.
Yes. You know, people who have your kind of history, you know, the history with some very difficult parenting experiences, and who are currently in their lives experiencing just what you're describing, I will say that I don't know if you've ever been in therapy, but those kinds of difficulties, people often do very, very well in psychotherapy.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really do.
And it's something that I should bring my family into?
Well, you might want to start with yourself.
Yeah.
And then move on to looking at, you know, what some of the triggers are within the family.
Yeah.
So more of a family therapy approach, yes.
Yeah, I would just like closure, just to say I'm okay with that. If that was then and this is now. And
yes.
Have some closure to it. And forgiveness, which is a really hard thing for me.
It is hard, yes. Yeah. But you need to find some way to deal with anger that works for you.
Yeah.
Right now, it's the route you've chosen.
I always refer to when people bring up issues of anger and forgiveness. I was bullied by an older sibling. I have an older brother, and I was the youngest in the family, so I was sort of defenseless at the time. I truly was defenseless. And he really made me feel defenseless, that's for sure. And so we grew up, and he went on then to treat other people that way, primarily his wife, now ex-wife, and then his subsequent second wife, who he continues to treat that way. And he pretty much treats everybody else in the family that way. He'll just say really insulting things and angry things at people. So I've just stopped dealing with him altogether. I was thinking of when I was listening to the woman who just called in, the first thing that comes to mind is limit your exposure. Because this is just really nasty, negative stuff, and if you allow it into your life every day, then it just is very painful and not particularly useful for you. So I've had other family members say, well, you know, you can't just cut the guy out of your life. I mean, he is your brother. He's in the family. You can't avoid him. Yeah, that's true. All of that is true. But I've chosen to not deal with him at all. So when we're in, you know, a situation where we have to go to a wedding or a funeral or something, I just stay on the other side of the room and I don't talk to this guy. Well, I talk to his wife and everybody else, but I don't talk to him, and I'm not angry at him,
mm-hmm.
and I don't say bad things about him to other family members. I just won't have him in my life because I know what he's about,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not going to open myself up in my, you know, middle adulthood to him doing the same garbage that he did to me when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not defenseless anymore.
And that makes you realize that you are not defenseless. And by people feeling what we call that sense of empowerment, that can go some distance toward helping people feel less upset about abuse that they have experienced in the past. You know, the whole notion of forgiving and forgetting, I'm not a big fan of it. I'm not a big fan of people walking around in a state of intense, corrosive agitation. But if forgiving, and I don't like, you can tolerate without forgetting. I don't think it's a good idea to forget things.
I don't think so.
It's what you do with what you remember. Someone, in the example you describe, if you had the ability, which I would not encourage you to have, but if you had the ability to totally forgive and forget everything that your brother did in the past, and in fact continues to do, well, you know, then you'd walk up to him, you'd set yourself up over and over and over again
exactly.
to be knocked down.
The rest now, of the family does this, by
well,
the way.
That's their prerogative.
Yes.
But by not forgetting, you are what I would term wary.
Yeah.
Wary, W-A-R-Y. So you're cautious and you're wary because at any moment he can turn on you with his viciousness. And you know what? You remember that. And you know what? You don't want to continue to have that happen.
Yeah,
so what do? You remember and you avoid him. That
yeah.
doesn't mean you're walking around in a state. You have figured out a strategy. And I think it's a perfectly acceptable strategy. I mean, the bad news is you had this experience as a child. The good news is, fortunately, you know, you have a large enough family that you can have bonds and family relationships with other people because you have other siblings.
Yeah.
The difference between this and the former caller, and I make a distinction, is with the former caller, she has one parent left alive, which is her mother. And I would be reluctant to encourage her to, you know, avoid her mother. Unless she found it totally, totally intolerable, which I, from the phone call, I wasn't picking that up.
Yeah.
And I think a relationship with a parent is of a different nature than relationship with siblings, generally speaking.
Yeah, and I think it's important for people not to be confused. And I know that some people in my family have been my kids and my siblings have been very confused, and my mm-hmm. mother. They've confused my wariness and my learning and now my empowerment with an inability to forgive. So it was interesting that a couple of years ago, my adult son asked me, why do you have such a hate on for that guy?
Yeah.
He's not a really bad guy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I corrected the situation immediately and said, oh, no, don't be confused. I don't hate the guy.
Mm-hmm.
I feel sorry for him, in fact. Mm-hmm. I know he had a lousy childhood, too. And I just don't want that stuff in my life. So this is not about holding on to anger, and it's not
mm-hmm.
about not being able to forgive or understand the
mm-hmm.
other person. It's about just not exposing yourself to further disruption in your life.
Exactly.
Well, yeah. Thank you for calling in.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for the show.
That toll-free number is 1-800-565-1940, 1-800-565-1940. In the Halifax area, 420-9336. Our next caller is Dave in Nova Scotia. Hello.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great.
Good. I'm a sort of a creative personality. I probably don't speak as well on the phone as I would if I wrote my thoughts down.
Okay.
I've sort of learned to do that when I get angry.
Oh, good.
Because it really helps me get things in perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But I have been writing my thoughts down over the last month or so since I received an email from one of my two daughters, my youngest, who was concerned about our relationship as father-daughter. And to put it in a nutshell, her complaint is that we do fight a lot, we argue a lot, that I never praise her for any of her accomplishments, and that I always find a reason why her older sister has been more deserving than she has. In the same respect, in my recent email back, I did point out that their behavior has been somewhat different and that I do appreciate much of her accomplishments, educational, like academically, but that her behavior has not been that of deserving in certain situations and quite often resulting, referring to financial assistance.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
As in, if she doesn't go out and get a job and she doesn't work for 3 years, hardly at all, and I'm helping the other sister who is and trying to make ends meet, and this type of thing. But I am concerned about our relationship, and she's now recently hit me with an approach that she wants positive reinforcement. She doesn't want to hear anything negative. And I said, that's fine, but I felt I had to justify my previous actions on the basis of her email, so I had to bring that back up again.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'd like to move forward, but I'm not quite sure how to deal. I mean, can a father say, well, no, I'm never going to mention anything negative, you know, if you do something that I don't approve of? Or,
well, it's kind of an interesting scenario. How old are your daughters, Dave?
23, 25.
So the one who you're having this email conversation with is 23. And does she live close to you, or she lives away?
No, she's nearby.
Okay.
But now my previous wife and I, we separated or divorced many, many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So my youngest daughter was quite young, but there was never any bickering or anything of that sort. We've mm-hmm. always had a good relationship, and both shared the children. So
she said she doesn't want to hear any criticism from you ever again.
Right. Well, she doesn't want anything negative anymore. She feels that that's in the past. But
okay. She asks you for money, and you say no. Well, I'm not prepared to do that. Is that considered negative?
I'm just
curious.
Well, I don't know. I haven't quite hit that one yet, but a recent thing was on a Visa card that I give to each of the daughters as an emergency thing.
You gave them an emergency visa?
That's right. Well, it's basically in case they have a problem. And basically, it's consequences and actions. And I said to each daughter, if you need to use this, let me know, because the card is to both of you, so you don't want to get any surprises. And I put a relatively low limit on it.
Okay.
And she didn't honor that. She would continue to use it and then not inform me. And I finally gave an ultimatum, and then she exceeded it again. So then I took the card away.
Okay.
At that point, that's when I, shortly after, received this letter essentially, if this was a friendship, then she would not, she would end the friendship on the basis of how it's been going. And it does seem to hinge back on monetary often, where she feels she's deserving, but she does say that I don't seem to reinforce things, and it's a very long story for me to get into. Say,
yes,
start giving you reasons why.
Yeah, and it sounds like there's a fair bit of history.
Right.
And I guess this would be the kind of situation where I'm inclined to encourage you to go and sit down with a family therapist
okay.
to perhaps review the history of this relationship.
Right.
Because it does sound like there's a fair bit of history. There's several things in what you told me that do kind of cause me to, wonder about who's the parent, who's the child here. Because what you're describing, she takes a fairly, dominant role here, dictating to you what she will do and dictating how you are to speak to her and how you're not to speak to her, and kind of defining the terms of the relationship. I'm wondering who's the parent, who's the child.
Right.
Yeah. Do you wonder that sometimes yourself?
It's funny. She and I are probably closer alike than my other daughter and I.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps that is a problem, like personalities, because we're both very emotional. I'm a creative person, and
mm-hmm.
I'm emotional. That's why I've sort of learned to try to slow things down and put it in writing.
Yes. Well, I think that's a very good strategy. But in terms of, I think that that's very good that you recognize that about yourself, that you feel you're more effective with writing. But it sounds like you've hit a bit of a kind of a gridlock.
Yes.
I should say a gridlock in terms of how to move in this rather challenging father-daughter relationship.
Right.
So yeah, I'd suggest you speak with someone.
Okay.
Yeah.